Chapter 28. What the hell fell? What if all of us in the world discovered that we were threatened by a power from outer space, from another planet? Ronald Reagan. Yeah, what if? The quote above is real, which is to say that Ronald Reagan really said it. And I'm not surprised. Ronald Reagan was a throwback to the 1940s and 50s, and during those decades, UFOs were a big rage. In fact, the term flying saucer came into existence in 1947 when an airplane pilot named Kenneth Arnold reported that he had played Catch Me, Catch Me with 9 strange aircraft in the skies over the American Northwest. Since the sighting took place in broad daylight, Arnold was able to clearly describe the boomerang-shaped crafts he saw. He was also able to describe their curious movements. The UFOs, he said, moved the way a saucer would if it were skipping across the surface of a lake. Some reporter distilled Arnold's description into the phrase flying saucer, and we've been using it ever since. Needless to say, reporters in the 40s and 50s made it their business to interview every schmo that claimed he had had an encounter. But other than Arnold, it always seemed as though they were interviewing the same guy, the same farmer from somewhere like Devil's Asshole, Alabama. And the coverage would always start off the same way, with the reporter sticking one of those big round microphones on the farmer's face and asking him, "Tell me, sir, what did you see?" The story would always go something like this. "Well, let me get a grip on the situation here, tell you where I was, I'll tell you what I saw. Let's see, oh, I remember where I was now. I was setting up on my front porch, see? And my twin albino boys, they was carving their names in each other's feet, you know what I mean? And my wife was inside trying to find herself in a mirror, okay? A mirror. I never said she's a bright woman, that's my Martha. Can knock a boil off a weevil's testicle with a wad of chaw from 40 paces, but I never said she was a bright woman. Okay, then what? Anyway, you see where my dog's taking a shit by that barn over there? Look, there he goes now. Go, Spot, go. Anyway, this cigar-shaped object come down out the sky, and this little bug-eyed green sumbitch got out, looked around, and ate one of my hogs. And then he ate my wife. Well, she didn't seem to mind that too much. Matter of fact, she went with him. Martha, if you can hear me, I've got a sink full of dirty dishes here. I've got 2 bloody-footed boys. You better get back down there, and don't give me no shit about what dimension you're in." Coincidence or conspiracy? Don't any normal people see aliens? If you read the tabloids, you may believe that it is actually necessary to have albino twin boys, webbed feet, or some other outward sign of inbreeding to encounter aliens. This is false. A lot of pilots have encountered aliens, and they're not even allowed to have long hair, let alone third nipples. Besides, researchers suggest that government sources have actually planted less credible and even downright weird claimants in order to bolster the belief that all witnesses are delusional, attention junkies, or nuts of another sort. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what would a farmer know about different dimensions? What would a farmer know about UFOs? Hey, if Barry Goldwater could be convinced that aliens exist, someone as open-minded as a farmer can know a lot. Aliens visit us all the time. UFOs land and leave bizarre things behind. I mean, where else could all those minivans have come from? Don't bury the evidence. In his lifetime, Barry Goldwater was called a lot of things, sometimes by me. But one thing the conservative former senator from Arizona was never called is a wild-eyed conspiracy nut. So it's important to note that even he became frustrated with government stonewalling on the issue of UFO research. He wrote this letter on the 28th of March, 1975, to a group of ufologists. "The subject of UFOs is one that has interested me for some long time. About 10 to 12 years ago, I made an effort to find out what was in the building at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where the information is stored that has been collected by the Air Force, and I was understandably denied the request. It is still classified above top secret. I have, however, heard that there is a plan underway to release some, if not all, of this material in the near future. I'm just as anxious to see this material as you are, and I hope we will not have to wait much longer." Barry Goldwater died May 29, 1998, and before the material hidden at Wright-Patterson is released, I probably will too. Anyway, the point is this. Farmers and pilots and regular people are great UFO witnesses because they aren't afraid to tell people exactly what they have seen. Unlike the government and the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, NASA, Why, they wouldn't admit the possibility that aliens walk among us if someone at the very highest levels of government was discovered to have abducted young women, probed their genitalia with strange cigar-shaped objects, and marked their clothing with viscous fluids impervious to virtually any cleaning system on Earth. Okay, so maybe that's a bad example. But what has become known as the Roswell incident is a case in point. On July 2, 1947, just a few days after Kenneth Arnold's UFO encounter, rancher Mac Brazell happened upon some peculiar wreckage on his spread near Corona, New Mexico. The wreckage was strewn over about a half mile of Brazell's property and defied identification. From the debris, the rancher collected a few samples, including a piece of an odd tinfoil-like material that was easily molded, folded, and creased, but popped immediately back into its original shape the moment it was released. And a dowel fabricated of what appeared to be light plastic that, unlike plastic, could not be scratched, burned, or melted. Over the next few days, he showed it to a number of friends and family members who were quite interested in the find. Though the civilians were hardly as agitated by the discovery as were officials from the nearby Roswell Army Airfield, Major Jesse Marcel was immediately dispatched to inspect Brazell's evidence. That same day, he filled two Army vehicles with as much wreckage as he and a colleague could collect and sent it to Washington for analysis. The following day, he returned to the ranch, where more debris, including a metal assemblage that measured some 4 feet in length, was gathered. Some of the space junk was transported to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, while other samples were sent back to Roswell. The military being what it is, a tight-ass, tight-lipped government organ and armed agent of paranoia, word filtered down through all of the personnel associated with the cleanup that this was a top-secret investigation. But the dictum came too late. News that the government had acquired the remains of a crashed flying disc had already been released by Wright-Patterson's Public Information Office. Moreover, the story was being circulated by teletype and broadcast by several New Mexico radio stations. But as an Albuquerque station was broadcasting its coverage of the UFO crash, its transmission was suddenly interrupted by a teletype message from the FBI. It read, "Attention Albuquerque, cease transmission, repeat, cease transmission, national security item." The next day, the Air Force released a clarification, stating unequivocally that the mysterious debris that had been recovered from Mac Brazell's ranch had turned out to be nothing more than the remains of a weather balloon. A believable conclusion? Hardly. The authorities placed Brazell under house arrest for more than a week and warned him never to speak of what he had found. That seems a little extreme, considering the man supposedly found a benign meteorological device. What would they have done if he had happened upon a barometer? Put his eyes out? So, what the hell fell in Roswell? Many conspiracy theorists believe the original story promulgated by the military, that a spacecraft from another planet crashed near that small city. They also believe that the evidence seized by the Army Air Corps includes the ship and the bodies of its inhabitants, and that both are currently being housed in a mysterious building known as Hangar 18 on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Others accept the theory that an experimental craft of American make crashed in Roswell. Whatever theory you subscribe to, the bottom line is this. The government has taken great pains to make sure that we'll never know. There's a method to this madness. Unless a UFO decides to splatter itself all over the North 40, a farmer's life is quite simple. His encounters, usually with barnyard animals, are easy to classify. He meets up with, say, a chicken, and what happens next is either legal or illegal. End of story. Save the details for the judge. Not so for encounters with aliens. The Hynek classification system, devised by, surprise, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, was designed to categorize UFO sightings and human-alien encounters so researchers could more easily track manifestations by type and location. The designations are as follows. Nocturnal light. Any strange light or lights, i.e. not generated by aircraft, meteors, etc., visible in the sky. Daylight disk. Unidentified flying objects of any shape, visible in the sky during daylight hours. Radar visuals. UFOs located by radar and verified visually by eyewitnesses. Close encounter of the first kind. A UFO that hovers or passes within 500 feet of an eyewitness. Close encounter of the second kind. A UFO that leaves physical evidence of its presence, including burns on trees or the ground, radio and television interference, paralysis to humans, etc.
Close encounter of the third kind, a UFO in which an occupant or occupants are clearly visible to eyewitnesses. Close encounter of the fourth kind, a human is abducted by aliens. Close encounter of the fifth kind, alien-human communication. Mars on Roswell. As Jim Mars told me in an exclusive interview for this book, he has been in contact with two men who, over time, have proven themselves to be very credible UFO researchers. One has held a very important position in defense work, and both have very good track records for veracity. Anyway, these contacts recently provided Mars with a document anyone curious about Roswell would find edifying. The document is a copy of a classified report dated July 22, 1947. From the marks and initials scrawled on it, it is apparent to Mars that this document had been widely circulated, including among the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The document acknowledges that two crash sites were located by government investigators, one at a ranch near Corona, approximately 75 miles northwest of the town of Roswell, another approximately 20 miles southeast of the town of Socorro. According to the memorandum, the wreckage at the Socorro site was stirring up some excitement. That's because, according to the document, the wreckage at this site contained the majority of structural detail of the craft's airframe, propulsion, and navigation technology. But wait, there's more. The document goes on to say that the recovery of five bodies and a damaged escape cylinder precluded investigation. Five bodies and an escape cylinder sounds authentic, doesn't it? Well, hold on to your pressure helmet. The document also suggests that the personnel who assessed the wreckage also determined that the wreckage was not of the type belonging to any aircraft, rocket, weapons, or balloon tests that are currently conducted from surrounding bases. So the weather balloon story was full of hot air, and we were the last to know. Surprise! Chapter 29, Hallelujah, It's Raining Spacemen. I can assure you the flying saucers, given that they exist, are not constructed by any power on Earth. President Harry Truman, 1950. You know, I love cops. Of course, I love them more now that I play one on TV. I go through a red light, I run over a pedestrian, cop pulls me over, takes one look at me, smiles and says, "Oh, it's you." I literally can't get arrested anymore. But there's a big difference between West Coast cops and the police in the East. West Coast cops are obsessed with traffic. New York cops don't give a shit about traffic. You can be driving along the streets of Manhattan 60 miles an hour with a beer between your legs, seatbelt flapping out the door, big joint in your mouth, go through five red lights, pass a New York cop and yell, "Yo, bring me a cup of coffee on your way back, okay?" So what's this got to do with aliens? Just this. Judging from the number of UFO crashes that have been reported over the years, it seems to me that our alien brothers could use some traffic direction. You think your insurance company is giving you a hard time? Check out these accident reports. December 22, 1909. A story that made front page headlines from New York to the Midwest detailed the crash of a large spacecraft in an area west of Chicago. Although the crash was reportedly witnessed by thousands, the wreckage was never found. May 1947. A strange airship splatters itself across the scenery of Spitsbergen, Norway, and the airship wasn't all that was strange about this case. July 2, 1947. On this date, a flying saucer abruptly stopped flying over Roswell, New Mexico. The wreck and the subsequent shoddy cover-up is believed to have launched a million government skeptics, countless researchers, and innumerable theorists, some of whom believe that at least one survivor and the bodies of several other extraterrestrials were recovered from the crash. February 13, 1948. When three radar units tracked a nose-diving aircraft northeast of Aztec, New Mexico, Secretary of State George Marshall asked that a party of investigators search the area. They discovered a demolished 30-foot disc and, some believe, the remains of a dozen charred humanoids. April 1950. Mr. E.C. Bassa discovers saucer wreckage and the bodies of four aliens in a remote area of Argentina. When he returned to the site with a friend the next day, the saucer was gone, but both men glimpsed a cigar-shaped UFO in the skies above them. May 21, 1953. An Air Force helicopter pilot reports that he was summoned to the scene of a UFO crash in Kingman, Arizona. The pilot, who had been recruited to help in the recovery of the craft, claimed to have seen a large metal disc that had impacted the ground so hard it plowed up a furrow of earth some 20 inches deep. In an affidavit published in UFO magazine, he also claimed that a space-suited alien was found in the wreckage dead. November 9, 1974. A group of teenagers report having seen a glowing craft crash into a lake outside of Carbondale, New Jersey. The boys were detained by the police while a disc-shaped craft was recovered from the water. Several days later, local authorities reported that a railroad lantern and battery were the only things found submerged in the water and that the teenager's story had been a hoax. Refresh my memory. There was no Mauser in the book depository, right? And there was only one Oswald, right? May 6, 1978, a massive glowing UFO crashed into a 13,000-foot mountain in Padcaya, Bolivia. A search party made up of military personnel and scientists was sent to investigate, but found nothing. He's back! In May 1947, an American journalist reported that a mysterious flying ship had crashed in Spitsbergen, Norway, and that British scientists and airmen were quietly investigating the wreckage. The journalist was, you guessed it, Dorothy Kilgallen. Although the story was only a passing blip for one day in the U.S. media, the Swedish military acknowledged the craft's otherworldly origin before the item was silenced by the military. Abracadabra. After reading about all those terrestrial mishaps, the crashes that I have mentioned are just the tip of the iceberg. You may have the impression that planet Earth is littered with more quivering masses of unidentifiable greenish-grayish goo than you'd find on the buffet table at a Hadassah lunch. And, according to many researchers, you'd be right. UFOlogists believe that scientists have confiscated the remains of at least 115 aliens who bit the dust on the blue planet, and that another 11 aliens were purportedly taken alive. No shit. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Richard, I see things splattered on the road all the time. How can I tell if what I'm looking at is an ET or just a really strange-looking possum? The UFO Crash Retrieval Syndrome by Leonard H. Stringfield should help you make sense of the carnage. As a rule of thumb, ETs don't have thumbs, though many have one finger that is noticeably longer than the others. These fingers might come in handy when scratching certain hard-to-reach places, but reportedly, ETs don't have those places either. According to doctors who claim to have taken part in numerous alien autopsies, aliens have no digestive system, no intestines, no alimentary canal, and no rectal area. In addition, ETs have small noses and mouths, gray or ashen reptile-like skin, and large heads in which they store brains that measure about 500 cc's, larger than those of average humans. They sound just like Calvin Klein models, don't they?